it's Dimpna here, and welcome to ilovereallestate.tv. If you're listening to me from iTunes, I encourage you to go and have a look at my website, ilovereallestate.tv, and subscribe. I've got a lot of good stuff there for you. I've got lots of free stuff to go and have a look at. And also, if you're downloading my podcast, my weekly podcast off my website, I encourage you to go and sign up for iTunes, because, of course, that gives you lots of specials as well. Now, this week, I have a very, very exciting story to tell you. And it's a real riches story. It's an amazing story of determination and true raw grit and success to get out there and turn things around again. I always find stories very inspirational, and I know I learn a lot from them, and I certainly learn so much from my students just as much as the other way around. And I thought, you know what, I'd really like to get everybody to hear my next guest story, because it is not only inspirational, but it's also educational as to just how it doesn't matter where you're starting from or your circumstances, your education, your past, your knowledge, your anything. Making a start is the important thing, and doing it right, getting the right help and support around you is what really counts. This gentleman has gone from virtually nothing, in fact, probably worse than nothing. He's gone from a position of no income, no job, no equity, no money, and no credit. In fact, very bad credit. So it probably doesn't get much worse than that from a starting position. But that's when he came to me, and that's when he came on board and started to make things happen. He started to get his head in the right spot. He started to put some learning into place. He got his structures right and his tax right, and he got his strategies, business plan right. And from there, he's now in a position with all of the deals that he's got underway at the moment and all of the passive income that he's got secured at the moment, which is not all quite finished, I might add, but to being in a position where when these deals are finished, he will have equity of about $1.6 million and a passive income of over $100,000 a year. Now, that's pretty jolly good going from being worth basically nothing from a financial perspective, obviously everything from a personal perspective, but from a very low starting point to going to, you know, $1.6 million and a passive income of over $100,000 in a few short years. Now, as I say, not all those deals are finished yet. Some of them are still underway, and, you know, it'll probably take another year or so for it to finish some of them off. Some are finished, some aren't finished. But that's his profit share as we sit at the moment of where he's at. So, the person I'd love to introduce you to is Keith Farquhar, a student of mine. Hello, Keith, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here, Dipma. How are you? Nice to speak to you again.
I'm doing very well, Keith, and thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story and your wealth of wisdom with everybody as well. Now, Keith, you let me just give everybody a little bit of a background on yourself, if I can. You were brought up in Zimbabwe, in obviously in the African continent. I can't get my words right this morning. On the African continent, and you know, you were basically brought up as a, you know, farm boy, and you built up a farm over there to start with, I think, and then grew to four farms. Just explain what your life was like in Zimbabwe.
In Zimbabwe, we had a lifestyle second to none, really. It was great. I mean, the African continent as a whole is a beautiful place, and all the animals and the birds and, you know, the countryside is really great, but a lot of opportunities. And fortunately for us, the high risk, really, of the nature of the African politics, you know, didn't end up right for us. But as a lifestyle, was brilliant. We had five farms there. We had a fleet of 56 trucks and an aircraft charter business, all of which I built up myself, obviously with the help of others that worked with me. But yeah, I got myself into a position there where I was really the king of the castle.
Now, you employed a lot of people too. You had a tobacco plantation that employed, what did you say, 1,000 people?
Yeah, at peak periods, between all the farms and the transport and the aircraft, we used to employ just under 1,000. It is a seasonal, the farming is basically a seasonal type of thing. We had a basic labour force, and then in the peak periods of the seasons when we were harvesting, and that the women and in fact the children used to come and work as well, all to put more money into the family pocket. And on the farms we had schools for the children that we subsidised them with, schools and clinics and things like that as well. But yeah, 1,000, just on 1,000 at peak periods between all the enterprises.
Wow. And then, of course, well, we all know the political unrest that goes on over there. I mean, it's something that's ruined a beautiful country. But if I can just relay your story there of basically one day, you know, some men in a bunch of trucks rolled in with big machine guns and basically said you got 48 hours to leave. Is that right?
That's correct. We had to leave the farm, not the country. We were given 48 hours to take our personal things and move off, and it wasn't only me, but no, it happened to all of us, or certainly 95% of us who were farming, and they basically decided that they were going to take the land and give it back to the rightful owners, and with the land was all the improvements and movable assets for that matter. You know, they believed that the tractors and the trucks and vehicles all belonged to the people as well. So that's what happened basically to all of us.
Okay. Now, you obviously decided that your family and everything was obviously more important, which is, you know, they are. And you grabbed all of your, whatever you could find, I guess, and took off. But the others didn't, did they?
Most people did, sir, or at least moved into the city. There were a few people that stayed behind to challenge it. And my neighbour, unfortunately, was one of those people, and he's not with us anymore.
Yeah, it's a very sad story when things like that happen. So you did what then? What happened? I mean, you basically had everything stripped from you, everything that you'd built up yourself. You were, you know, you were a self-made millionaire in your own right, and you had it all just taken away on a political whim. So what happened then?
We sort of looked at the situation and thought, well, you know, where to now? You know, where do we go? There was another city where I had a couple of trucks that I'd kept out that weren't on the farm that I was able to continue working with. But when we looked at the situation, it was just getting worse and worse. And we thought, where to now? South Africa, you know, you're going, hopping from the frying pan into the fire. And we'd done a lot of travelling. We travelled at that stage 36 countries, and Australia seemed the closest to what we knew in terms of language, you know, outdoor life, generally the lifestyle. And also I had my eldest two daughters were over here in Brisbane anyway, doing their tertiary education. So this was the obvious choice for me.
Okay. So you came to Australia. You actually went to Perth initially, didn't you?
We went to have a look at Perth. I looked at Perth and looked at the East Coast as well. My first visit to Australia, within 4 hours of being here, I got a phone call from a friend who was farming near us back in Zimbabwe. And he said, "You've got to come to Mackay." I said, "Well, where's Mackay?" He said, "It's far, but get here."
It's far.
Anyway, so I thought it would be a great ocean road thing, and I had a car and drove up there, and 10 hours later was in Mackay, not seeing much of the ocean. But on the weekend he said, "Come to a barbecue, and there's a couple of Zimbabweans there and whatever," and there were just on 50 families that I knew of there. So
wow.
It was the obvious place to go at that time for me because of the sort of support group.
Yeah. So then what happened?
What I had managed to recover, I've always been one that just get in and do it, and I went and I bought a business, And I bought the stock and the business, and I couldn't afford to buy the land as well, so I leased the land. And after 3 years, I lost the lease on the land, and the company was liquidated. And at that stage, I was left without a house, without a car, without a job, without anything. So that was the second time around, and this time it was my fault, and essentially because I didn't get adequate advice when I came here. I was sort of came here thinking I can just do what I did before, and everything works on a gentleman's handshake. But in this case, was different.
Very different. So you put that first entree into Australia, and you know the obvious downturn because you lost that business and you lost everything again. Down to lack of education, lack of knowledge of how things work here and that sort of thing?
No, absolutely. I for one, I used the same solicitors as the other solicitors, and, you know, when it came to...
That's never a good move.
a confrontation, they just said to me, well, conflict of interest, we can't represent you. And I was left at 9 o'clock in the morning going to court without even anyone to represent me. Mm. And it was then, part of the business we had was landscaping, so my son and I set up another little business and carried on doing landscaping. And it was while we were doing that that I saw the advertisement for your one-day introduction. And what drew me to it more than anything was getting your structures right so that you protect yourself.
Yeah.
And that's where it all started, you know, that's where the Australian journey started, put it that way.
So the fateful day when you came to see this woman speak and hear what she had to say, I bet you were sitting there thinking, well, if she's not any good, I'll leave by morning tea, is that right?
Not exactly. you know, only one day, just now I can sit through those things. But, you know, I wanted to work out, you know, for myself, what I really needed to do, because I'd come here with a strategy that I'd used before that had worked for me, and it definitely didn't work here.
Yeah.
So I was willing to listen to anybody who could provide me, you know, ideas for the way forward. And this was a free one-day thing, and I had nothing to lose. I just had to go and listen.
Okay, so you came along to that, and now obviously you became a student of mine thereafter. And, you know, there's a huge amount of learning. It's mostly for my students who come on, particularly those who have never had any, you know, background in the financial matters of this country. It's a very steep learning curve, and, you know, I bombard you with tax and asset protection and structures and financing and legal issues and succession planning, and as well as some, you know, property business planning and money management skills. Now, from there, what did you do? I mean, it was something that... it's a lot to take in for anybody first time round, and also for you coming in cold, it must have been quite overwhelming for you.
Yes, but it was very obvious to me after the first day that was the way forward. And as I've said to you before, when you told us all to write down the 10 things we needed to do now, I wrote down one thing, and that was get close to Dipner. Yeah, and that's exactly what I did. I joined your program, and I went forward from there, and it was quick. It was a sort of a rocket go forward, you know. And then literally by listening to you, to what you have to offer, and listening to the various speakers in that you bring along to these seminars and things like that, which are really, really, these guys are full of information that is all good.
Mm. So your path forward from now, obviously you've gone from a very low start, because really you lost everything twice, and you, coming along to be a student of mine, you're in a pretty bad shape financially and probably emotionally too, because you know it takes a very strong person to be able to get up and go again and pick yourself up and you know, say, okay, well, what next? Because, in fact, let's just talk about that, because it is a it's something that is really understated when you talk about success and making things happen. And that ability just to be able to pick yourself up, dust yourself off and say, okay, well, this is where I'm starting from, without hanging on to any of that past regret and hatred and blame and all that kind of stuff that really, you know, it does hold you back, and it keeps you very much cemented in your situation, because everybody goes through something. I mean, maybe not as dramatic as you, but everybody goes through something that does pull them back, you know, that might have been considered to be a mistake at the time. That if you hang on to it and you hang on to all of that emotional burden and everything that goes with it, it really inhibits you moving forward. How did you cope with that?
I'm not really sure, other than to say that, you know, nobody else is going to come and help you. You have to get up and move forward. You can either woe is me and go down into a hole and crash, burn and die, or you can actually get on with it. And the old adage of the sporting field, you know, you need to be on the field playing to be able to score a goal. And, you know, if you're on the field, and whether you're new at the business, whether you're a rookie player, or whether you're a seasoned professional, anybody can score a goal. But if you are sitting on the bench watching on the sidelines, there's no way you're going to score a goal. So I really didn't have the option just now. I had to get out there and score some goals. And the avenue that was put before me from that one day with you is where it was. And if you remember when I came to you, I said to you, I have no money, I have no house, I have no car, how do I do it? And you said, watch and listen and do. And that's basically what I did. I took the leads from you and went forward from there, obviously starting with joint ventures, because that's what you gave me as the way forward for me.
Mm. Well, it's obviously the easiest way. I mean, there are many ways that someone starting with absolutely nothing can move forward, but joint ventures is probably the easiest and fastest way to make that happen. You coming from a new country and everything, I mean, you really didn't know a huge amount of people. I guess you had some people from Zimbabwe that you knew, but, you know, you're starting a new country, new friends, new everything all over again. So did you find at the, you know, at the meetings that we have and the get-togethers and the seminars and those sorts of things, did you find it useful just, you know, talking to people who were also out there doing things, making things happen and were of like-mindedness to yourself? Because I find that's, you know, that's half the battle. If you can put yourself in an environment of you know, motivated, positive, like-minded people who are just all out there trying to help each other out and make, you know, make a few bucks on the way, then it's just a totally different paradigm to our normal society and our normal interaction with people at work or, you know, in social clubs and things like that. Did you find that?
Absolutely. The caliber of the people, you know, in the ultimate group and the seminars and things that we come to with you is really way above average and very inspirational and also positive. And I always find, as do most people, I'm sure, that, you know, when you come out of these seminars, you're lifted again, because there's absolutely no negativity around you. It's a great support group, and you know, everybody's positive and everybody's looking for a win-win situation. And on top of that, if somebody's doing well, everybody else is happy for them. There's no poor puppy syndrome type thing. It's a really, really great atmosphere and a place to be. So, and that's the first bit. And the second bit is the friends you make as you go along. The networking is great. The networking is absolutely huge. And for me, probably the biggest part of this is the networking. And then the opportunities that arise out of that, the people that you meet within the group, and what comes of opportunities. And I mean, you know the path that I've taken, but we've got all sorts of things happening now through networking.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, just the ability to be able to have mates in the market, I call them, who are, you know, doing similar things. And often, you know, to be able to do something with somebody else, whilst it's faster and quicker and whatever else, it's more fun. And it's also, you strengthen each other, even not only emotionally but also financially. Because, you know, if someone's got abilities but no equity, no income, then the two together are a perfect match. If someone's got equity but no income, again, you're each helping each other out. You know, there's lots of combinations of people that as to why they are better off together than apart, other than, you know, just a sheer motivation and inspiration, and, you know, two together can do more than one man slogging it out on his own. One thing I do ask my students to do is, you know, leave your ego at the door. And I really feel that's very important, and I don't say that lightly, because it's something that if you can be open, if you can open your, you know, your heart and your mind and you know, to the ability to be able to do whatever it is that your peg in the sand is, whatever your goal is, you can achieve so much more without having to battle against yourself effectively when you're trying to maintain a status or an ego or any of those sorts of things. Now, Keith, let's get on to your story. You did do joint ventures, and initially your strategy was to build up chunks of money out of doing manufactured growth, as I call it, which is things like renovations and landscaping and subdivisions and constructions and those types of things. How many of those deals are you in, and have you been involved in?
Okay, Dipna, it's a continuing thing, as you well know, but the initial ones that we did for chunk deals, so to speak, there were 13 of those.
Right.
I've been with you for nearly two and a half years now, but over the time, some of them are still not finished, and they are varying degrees, but there were 13 of those, and we have change course a bit now, because we're now in a position where we can hold some.
Mm-hmm.
So I have two other joint ventures now, which are really good ones, which are hold.
Yep.
And then I've looked at some vendor finance ones. So there's two there that are pretty much on the go. You know, we're getting into those ones, which we'll be able to do ourselves, because we've eventually got ourselves into that position where we can.
So that, I mean, that's an obvious course to take, where you start off building up chunks of money that gives you the flexibility to be able to either do things on your own or do things on a bigger scale that you're able to keep, because the name of the game, of course, is building up an income stream, a pension for life that is indexed, and, you know, that you can live off. And if you make it once, you don't have to make it again. And that income stream starts to become so important. So you've kind of gone from, okay, let's build it up, let's get on our feet, let's, you know, get some clout behind us, to rightio, now we're in a position where we can start to create passive income streams for the rest of our lives. And come on, Keith, let's share some of those figures. I know in Australia nobody likes to talk about money, and, you know, as children we get slammed for asking somebody, you know, are they rich, or you must have a lot of money, you drive a nice car, or any of those kind of things. You know, we slam our kids down for saying those things and tell them it's rude and all that kind of stuff. You know, the whole stigma around money in Australia is appalling, and we have the worst relationship with money, I think, anywhere in the Western world. And it really is due to this whole tall poppy syndrome. I know you mentioned that before, that, you know, it's okay to get a little bit ahead, but don't get too far, otherwise, you know, you're obviously dealing drugs, you know. See, I told you we must have been doing something illegal. And, you know, we have this attitude thing that is just terrible, and it is something that I've made it my personal crusade to get out there and change in this country, to try and, you know, get some positivity around money and wealth, because the more money you have and the more wealth you have, the more you can do, the more you can help, the more you can make happen. And, you know, it's just a tool. Money is just energy. It's just a tool that you use. The more of it you have, the more of it you can do. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now. Back to you. Tell us the figures, Keith. What with the projects that you've got underway at the moment, what what value are they when they're all completed? Because I know some of them are partway through and things like that. But your share of that value, what would it be? Give me a ballpark figure.
To qualify things first, we need to remember that the first thing we did when we came to you, and you just said, as you were talking earlier, that create something that you can keep and you can have forever. So that's the first thing, was get the structures right so that this time you can keep it and have it forever. So that was the first bit of my journey with you, was restructuring everything, getting things correct so that that will happen. So out of the joint ventures, out of the 13 joint ventures, and you have qualified already, there's a few of them that have still got a long way to go. I mean, one of them is a set of 6 units, so we're way off that. But by the end of it, out of those 13, my share of that is about 550, or our share, my son and I, is about 550. Since we've gone on to the buy and hold for and manufactured growth, the first one of Barry's that you know about, we'll manufacture 60,000 growth on there and have a positive income of 650 a week. But if we sold it at the end of the development, putting more units on, we would have about 550 profit, of which 275 would be ours.
So that's on top of the 550 of the other projects?
Half of the 550 of that project. Yeah. And then there's another one also in a joint venture, which we're just going into now. And similar, it will be positive and we will hold it. But if we sold that, we'd have another 200,000 there.
Right. So added all that up, that's close to $1 million.
It is, but there's more. you also taught us about vendor financing and people who are doing vendor financing. And at the moment, we're in negotiations with two of those, and that obviously we'll be able to keep it all, and there's another 600 there. So you're looking at about 1.6 at the end, and the end is not tomorrow. It's probably a year and a half away, but in total, that's what we're looking at. So within 3 to 4 years, we would have built up that sort of thing.
Wow. That's really good, Keith, you know, because... You know, looking at people who just do, you know, normal jobs and things like that, the comprehension of making 1.6 million in the space of a few years is out of the question. But most people are starting with a lot more than you. You know, most people have more capacity than you, because once you came to this country and then having that thing happen with the business and the lease not being renewed and all of that sort of thing, it left you with bad credit as well. So you were really starting with no money, no income, and bad credit.
That's right. Yeah, it wasn't a good place to be.
It wasn't. I mean, it seems like an age away now from where you are and the person you are. You know, as a person, you have grown enormously over those years. So much to the point where, you know, I have you helping other students out to get them going and make things happen, and you know, and that's something that I don't do lightly.
Yeah, well, that's good.
So, you know, I guess for everyone listening, it's a case of, well, don't underestimate yourself. Don't be selling yourself short, because if you can start from no money, no job, no and bad credit to get to, in a few short years, you know, $1.6 million in equity and a passive income of, on my recollection, that comes to over $100,000. Is that right?
Yeah, just, I'll be there.
Just on what you're saying there. So over $100,000 passive income that comes in every year thereafter, you know, that's great. That sets you up. That's superannuation, effectively. And it's controlled. You know, one of the things that I like to really emphasize is control over your money. I think too many of us have a fear of failure, which leads us to just pass off our money to somebody else to manage, to somebody else to take care of. And I really feel subconsciously a lot of that is about the fact that they have a fear of failure, and if something goes wrong, they can say, well, it wasn't my fault, it was their fault, you know, and pass off the blame. But in reality, what you need to be doing is stepping up to the mark and taking control of your own personal circumstance. Take control of where you're at. Take control of where you want to go, and, you know, get out there and have your successes and make your own mistakes along the way and learn from them, because just passing it off to somebody else is not the answer. And the more all of us do that, the better this country is going to be as a whole, and individually, the better every single one of us is going to be financially. Because, you know, there's nobody thinking as much about you are over tea and toast on a Sunday morning as you are. No matter how good they are as an accountant or a lawyer or a financial planner or anything else, you know, you're it. You're the one who's thinking the most about you. You're the one who's doing the most for you. So you don't want to be passing off that control of your money and your personal circumstances to anybody else, in my opinion. But then I am a little bit of a control freak. Now, Keith, where to for you now? I mean, obviously these jobs have all got to be completed and you've got some great passive income coming in there. Where's your next peg in the sand? Where's your next goal?
The short term, it also revolves around the networking and the support that you get out of the group. But in the short term, we've set up a building and renovating part of the company, which is doing a lot of work at this stage almost entirely for members within the group. So there's another opportunity that comes out of the group, you know, out of the ultimate setup, where we're getting a lot of work without even having to market, because it's all just coming to us.
Mm.
So we've set up this company with a registered builder, registered plumbers and electricians and carpenters and whatever, where we can do renovations and building for other people. And at this stage, it's almost entirely for people within the group. So that's good. And where to from now? Get this really going so that my son Barry, who's also one of your students, can carry on with it when I decide that it's time to go and travel again and see some more of the world.
Mm.
But I suppose essentially for me, it's to start getting some more hold properties so that there is enough in passive income, not only for me but for the family.
Mm.
And that's where I'm going from now. That's what I'm looking at. I think chunk deals are not a thing of the past. We will continue to see if there's one available, we'll do it. But if there's an opportunity where we can hold them, either in joint ventures or with vendor finance at this stage, then we will do that. We'll hold them so that we have that passive income.
Yeah. And obviously the bigger picture there is for you to, you know, to build up that wealth again. I was talking to your son the other day, and he has a, I don't know whether I'm supposed to be sharing this with you or not, but anyway, I'm going to. he has the goal of buying the farm back, basically, not necessarily the one in Zimbabwe, but getting the farm, getting the piece of dirt again that he remembers from his childhood.
Yeah. I'm well aware of that, yeah. And I think that's something that we as a family all miss.
Mm.
is the farming and the land. And I know it's very different to here to what we were doing over there. But yes, Barry would very much like that. And he's working towards that. And he's doing well, I might add. He's doing really well. And although he's been working with me for the first 2 years, doing these renovations and building works and whatever. Since he started your program in November last year, he's really shot ahead and he's starting to understand it a lot more.
Mm.
So it's been really great. And it's great for a youngster of 24 to be able to, you know, start now and get things going, because at least here in Australia, it's a level playing field and, you know, he'll get it right along with his other sisters, yeah.
Yeah. So how many children do you have?
Four, beautiful children, and we all get on extremely well, and we're not all together. The youngest is in Western Australia at university there, at UWA. The two elder ones are in Brisbane, and Barry's up here in Mackay with me. But we all see a lot of each other, and it's really great. It's a great little family here.
I mean, after the adversity and things that you've been through, to, you know, to hang on to each other and to start all over again, I can't wait until I can get those girls of yours in my program so that I can start working with them as well.
Neither can I. And Tan's already told me that in August, at the Perth one, she's going to be there.
So. Excellent.
Yeah.
That's good. So I can start getting inside their heads as well, huh?
That's what I'd like.
Now, Keith, something I do want to just have a little bit of a chat about before we finish off this morning is I really want to talk about how you pick yourself up and go again, because a lot of the people listening, I think everybody to some extent, will have had stuff go on in their life which has really set them back. It may be financial, it might be health-wise, you know, it may be relationships and things like that, but everybody has some degree of adversity that really... you know, puts them back a few steps. What messages could you give people and help people with to get back up again and go again? And what gives you that resilience? What gives you that drive to go, okay, well, that happened. What do I learn and how do I move on? What can you help? How can you help people with that?
To me, it's simple. I got tired of people telling me everything happens for a reason, but it probably does. And to me, it was very simple in that there is nobody that is going to come and spoon feed you. People will teach you to fish, but they're not going to fish for you. You've got to do it yourself. And to me, I was in another country without anything, without anywhere to go. So there was nobody really to turn to other than myself. So the message basically is that you just need to have the willpower to get up and get on the field and start playing again and move forward. But do it with some intelligence, and that's where you came in, you know, with the structures and the education side that went with it. You know, the education of it is huge. And if you take the time to get that education and to pick the eyes out of it and do what you need to do that's pertinent to yourself, then there's no stopping you. There is absolutely no stopping you as long as you have the will to do it. Mm. And I think I've said before that, you know, for success you need three things. You need money, you need knowledge, and you need the will to do it, or the will to work. And if you've got that third one, you can go and get the other two. But you put all three together and you're away.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's what it's about. You've had the, you probably had two of those, and then you were working on the third, and you've got that now. So now it's a case of, okay, where's my next peg in the sand? That farm, here we come, huh?
Absolutely. A farm and the travelling again. But that other thing you just mentioned is that peg in the sand that you teach us, and it's your goals. And you've taught us, although I used to have goals and that before, but you've taught us to set those out and then bring it back into shorter-term goals and things that you can actually reach. Mm. And just reach for one at a time until you get to your ultimate goal.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's an ongoing process. It's an ongoing learning process. I mean, I don't think there's any one book, one seminar, one anything that's going to be a fix-all. It's a case of that consistent, ongoing learning, education, support, mechanism, take action, you know, move forward to go to the next step. And it's a constant evolving. If we're not evolving and growing, we're stagnating.
Absolutely. And a lot of that comes from the support, from the other people in the group as well. And, you know, apart from the seminars and webinars and everything that we attend with you, a lot of it comes from the other people, because people are encouraged by what you are doing, and you're obviously encouraged by what they're doing. And it's the small little things. You talked about you know, other people helping you out in joint ventures and that. But where we are now, you know, there's a lot of our group working, doing similar things here, and everybody is helping each other. You'll never find somebody going to Bunnings, for example, without saying, I'm here, does anybody want anything, you know? Mm. And it's even down to those smaller things that, you know, everybody supports each other, which is a great situation to be in.
Yeah, no, it's really very good. Well, Keith, thank you so much for being a major inspiration to everybody who's listening. And, you know, your story is one of real adversity through to, you know, amazing results in amazing space of time. I mean, most people don't get to where you're at now or, you know, we'd be in 2 years' time in a lifetime, let alone in the short space of time that you've been able to make that happen and help your kids out along the way to, you know, to start to make those bounds and get things going for themselves. So you really are a major inspiration to everybody and all of the, my students who know you and work with you and you know, really learn from you constantly. So I thank you, Keith, from all of them as much as from me as well for coming on and being that inspiration, because I know some of this is pretty hard for you to talk about, but it really is an amazing learning journey for everybody else as well. I know it comes with a lot of pain to you, and that's understandable, but I think your real success is how you deal with that and have moved past it and, you know, creating something new, something bigger, something better.
Yeah, so, thank you, Dipna. And as well, thank you to you, because it's, you know, without your input and your knowledge and what you pass on to all of us, we would never be where we are now. And you do it with a lot of thought. And you really do make a difference.
Thank you. That's what I try to do anyway. Okay, Keith, well, thank you so much for being on the line, and thank you to everyone who's listening. And I'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon with another exciting chapter of education. Talk to you soon, guys. Bye-bye now.